Have the changes in the banking industry affected you? With the looming possibility that your local bank branch might disappear and more web, mobile, and social technologies, what will the changes mean for you and your business? Welcome to Breaking Banks with your host, Brett King. The possibility that banking is no longer a place you go, but just something that you do, has become very real. Now, here is Brett King.
Welcome to Breaking Banks this week. What is it? What's the date? I've got to look up my calendar. It's 22nd of January. I am in New York today. It's actually a beautiful day. It's warmed up a bit and the sun is out. It's been a bit of a crazy winter. But thankfully, we just had a vote in the Congress last night, and it turns out climate change is real now, but we can't decide on whether it's man-made. So, I know, not a good way to start off the show with politics, but on an interesting note, you guys probably saw the Microsoft Windows 10 launch yesterday. But the really exciting thing out of the Microsoft Windows 10 launch was not the Windows 10 launch, but this new product called HoloLens. Did you see it? You know, we've been talking about Google Glass and the end of Google Glass, which was also announced last week. Interesting timing that Microsoft then comes out with their new Glass product, which is essentially a really interesting holographic projection system, fully immersive projection system. If you haven't seen it, go and search on HoloLens on YouTube and check it out. Some pretty amazing technology. Now, you guys know I'm working on a new book right now. It's called Augmented. It's going to be out later in the year. And this is part of this change when technology becomes embedded in our life around us, and data is just an overlay on our life, whether it's in decision making or prompting us, or with an agent, artificial intelligence giving us cues and looking after our schedule and things like that. Part of this is definitely going to be about the overlay of data. We used to call that augmented reality, but it's becoming something more than that. And check out this HoloLens technology, and also look at Magic Leap that Google acquired last year for $540 million. There's definitely, the next few years, we're going to see a lot of immersive, augmented VR-type technologies come into play and just become quite normal. Not just for entertainment either. It's going to be used for all sorts of things. Can you imagine a brain surgeon or a surgeon working on, say, a surgery to extract a tumor or something, being able to have a 3D view of that tumor as he's operating using these glasses which are overlaying that, so he can operate precisely to remove this tumor? The possibilities are endless. So it's very exciting. For a technologist like me, stuff like this is what keeps me excited. Anyway, this is our startup show. You guys will recall we were live at Cyboss a couple of months ago in Boston, and we had a really good discussion with a number of the startups who were playing in the Inner Tribe Startup Challenge. So we're going to get some of those back on the show that we didn't get the chance to talk to in Boston. But we've also got some homegrown startups here from the U.S. that we're going to bring in. And one particularly that is just some really interesting traction. He's been on the show before, and we're going to welcome him back at this time. It's from his startup is called Lendo, and it's a really very interesting social scoring, credit scoring-based model of microfinance lending that is taking off around the world in places like Indonesia and the Philippines. Jeff Stewart, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
So tell me, you got some really interesting news about the technology that you guys have proofed, which essentially was using Facebook vouching and referrals to underpin credit decisioning in places like Manila, Philippines and Indonesia, where they didn't have, and Mexico, where they didn't have credit scoring systems in place or credit reference agencies. First of all, maybe explain to us how that works for those who haven't heard about Lendo before, and then we can get into the news about what you guys have done with that technology more recently.
Sure. So back in early 2011, we had a theory that you could use someone's social footprint to understand who they are and how they fit into the community, and tap into, on an opt-in basis, tap into that data stream so that people in the emerging markets, particularly, or people who are thin file clients from a traditional bank standpoint, could prove that they are who they say they are, and most important, that they're trustworthy. And our hypothesis is that we could analyze these networks and how they're connected to other people, and also specifically who they're connected to calculate this. And we felt that the most efficient way to prove this out was to actually set up lending operations. So we set up lending operations in Mexico, in the Philippines, and in Colombia, and started lending our own capital to perfect these algorithms and prove it out. And what we found is that it worked. We knew that these type of homophily-based algorithms worked in epidemiology. We've seen it work with things like predicting obesity or propensity to smoke. And what we've essentially proven is that it also works to predict repayment and willingness, specifically willingness to repay.
And there's definitely behavioral correlations there, isn't there?
Absolutely. There's a behavioral element, and then there's also a homophily element, which is basically that birds of a feather flock together.
So is this as simple as sort of asking someone in a social network to say, hey, you know, feel free to introduce your friends to us if you think they would be a good client of Lendo, but only people that you would feel comfortable lending money to?
Well, what we've been able to do is make it even easier than that by allowing an applicant to simply connect their Facebook or connect their Gmail or connect their Yahoo. We do the heavy lifting of actually analyzing the network and found that we could, rather than explicitly make them go through the friction of getting endorsements, we could actually analyze the network and predict who would be an endorsement based on how they interact. And we found that was predictive of repayment.
Understand. So what is the next stage for Lendo? What have you guys got in the pipe right now?
Well, the big news is that we yesterday announced that these algorithms are now available to any financial institution anywhere in the world. So over the last several months, we've been working with a couple dozen lenders to deploy our technology and insert the opting in, the Lendo opt-in process into their application process so that they can extend credit to people they wouldn't be able to extend credit to otherwise, be more efficient in their underwriting process, and also lower defaults.
Right, because, you know, what, again, you found out through these behavioral correlations and other things, these other data cues, that you can predict default more accurately than a historical credit score necessarily.
In these countries, to the extent there is a credit score, it tends to be very thin. But yes, we can predict better or on par with a credit score. What's most important is that for the bulk of the people on the planet, they don't have a credit score. You know, modern credit scores are based on transaction history, and most people don't have a transaction history, or at least one that's observable to a traditional credit bureau. But we're really excited that as hundreds of millions of people move onto smartphones, in parallel, we can move them into a modern credit infrastructure.
Absolutely. I just want to just a shout out to Brad Limer, who's pinged in, and he said we should check out the CICRET bracelet. I think that's how you pronounce it. CICRET. A very interesting bit of wearable tech. I know we've gone off on a tangent completely, Jeff. But so, Jeff, are you looking to, in terms of this announcement where you're now licensing this intelligent credit scoring, social scoring, data intelligence that you've built, or this engine you've built, are you looking to deploy that in countries where you currently have built up sort of a behavioral model and, you know, you have strong social network connections, or would you be looking at deploying this for banks here in the United States?
We're looking to deploy this anywhere in the world where the existing credit infrastructure is inadequate. So I think in the U.S., the opportunity is around the underbanked, people like new students, immigrants, people who wouldn't have a accurate or complete credit report. What we're even more excited about is the potential in places like Indonesia and India, Western Africa, where we're able to very quickly provide lift to a lending operation and really open up a whole new segment for access to financial services.
Is there any, when you get these learnings in markets like Indonesia and you start understanding behavior and you see correlations, like as you said before, things like drinking habits and smoking and things like that, and that the correlation of that with the ability to pay back a financing facility. Is there commonalities from one culture to another, or is there cultural differences there?
Well, let's see. First of all, the science, the epidemiological algorithms, have historically only been applied to public health. So the underlying math has been proven in health. What we've done is proven that the same math also works in finance. So we're not looking at smoking and smoke we're looking at how they're connected to the community and their digital behavior. What we went to great expense to do is prove that it works in multiple countries. And we did that by setting up an operation in Central America, by setting up an operation in Latin America, in Colombia, and setting up an operation in Philippines. And what we found is that there's one tweaking that you can do to get incremental lift by country, but the core math, the core algorithms work anywhere. So that means that our constraining factor to financial empowerment is really social media penetration and smartphone penetration.
Right, right. So my view of the world is that the credit score is under threat right now because it just doesn't give enough data. And it certainly is not a great predictor of default. It's sort of this mechanism which, well, if you screw up and you don't pay a loan, then we're going to punish you for the next couple of years. It sort of seems like that sort of mechanism to me. So how quickly do you think it will be that we'll start to see, particularly for the unbanked and the debanked in this area where they currently don't have a lot of, or students who are not so enamored with the whole credit scoring system and don't develop their credit like their parents did because they're just not hung up on it. How quickly will we see viable alternatives entering into the market where lenders are basing their decision off new algorithms?
Well, let me unpack that a little bit. There's really two main components for most lending. One is the willingness to pay, and the other is the ability to pay. So what the social network provides, or an analysis of the social network, is really understanding the willingness to pay, their reputation, their character. And I think that we're going to look back 10 years from now and kind of laugh at how we used to use credit bureau data to assess character and willingness to pay.
Agree.
The other component, though, is ability to pay. And what we've found is that a little bit of transaction history goes a long way in understanding ability to pay. So you can look at the social graph to get a broad estimate of income. You can get a broad estimate of lifestyle and expenses. We actually, in our the identity component, we have an identity service, and then we have a credit scoring service. In the identity, we actually predict the likelihood that a person is employed the way they say they're employed. And from that, you can do rough estimates of income and expenses of lifestyle based on how they're connected. But a little bit of transaction data goes a long way in the ability to pay department. And I think that's where some of the credit bureaus can add value. And using a credit bureau in conjunction with Lendo or social scores is very powerful. And we've shown that the two working together provide a lot of incremental lift. The other threat to the credit bureaus is as payments become more digital, things like digital wallets, digital receipts for transactions that can be observed from a smartphone, you're going to have a whole new set of transaction data that can be used for risk management. And I think that data combined with the social data is going to open up credit for hundreds of millions of people.
Right. Fantastic. Thanks, Jeff, for joining us. Stick around because I'm sure you'll be able to add some texture to the discussion after the break as well. But before that, we've got a few minutes to go before the break. I'd like to introduce Matthew Goldman. Matthew, you're part of the team that started Wallaby. And this is another aspect of the data here, which it comes back to the fact that loyalty and relationship is becoming more about data these days and context than it is, just like traditional rewards programs. So tell us how Wallaby started that transition out. For those that aren't familiar with Wallaby, maybe you can introduce the business as well.
Absolutely. So Wallaby was started with the idea that consumers in general, once they have access to credit, don't really understand the rules of the credit card products that they're using. The average American has 3.5 open loop credit cards, let alone all the other loyalty and debit cards they carry around with them. And cards tend to have very complex rules. They have due dates and APRs and balance limits and rewards and discounts and just a whole host of features and benefits as well as penalties that are very hard for an average consumer to keep track of. And we felt that it's better to help consumers use those products intelligently, save money, earn rewards, avoid fees, by helping them just understand their goals and get right to an answer. So where this really came to a head for me or was born out of is that I carried a few cards. I'm a former consultant for a brief time and traveled a lot and picked up a few cards. And I felt that I could keep track, but then, you get busy and you have work and you have life, and I was buying gas at a gas station and swiped one card, and then while I'm standing there, a TV screen on the gas pump turns on and tells me how it'd be so great if I only had a different card that earned me 5%. And my reaction was, actually, I do have that card and it's in my pocket right now, right? So oops, and that's very frustrating because I spend a lot on gas. I live in Los Angeles and there's a lot of driving, right? So I thought there must be some product to help me, and I didn't find anything. So we set about to build what is the most comprehensive database of credit cards in the U.S. for starters now, right? And understand how they work and what their fees and benefits are, and then give to consumers real-time answers. So a consumer can launch our app, whether it's on their phone or on their desktop, and say, I'm shopping at this website or at this physical store, and we can give them an answer as to what's the best card and why, or what cards to avoid and why. Say, for example, it's going to close tomorrow or they have very little open to buy left on it. And really trying to help them use what's in their wallet and then pair that with find the right product for them to add. We think revolving credit can be a very useful tool, but you can get a card that matches your spend patterns or you can get a card that doesn't. We want to help you get that correct product.
Fair enough. Listen, Matt, let's just take a quick break because we're coming up to break time, and then let's continue this discussion. I'd like to talk about the recent acquisition of Wallaby and what that means for your business after the break. So stick around. You're listening to Breaking Banks. We're talking startups, particularly in the credit space today. We just heard from Lendo, Jeff Stewart, and Wallaby. We're talking to LendStar and Lending Robot after the break. You're listening to Breaking Banks. We'll be right back after this short break.
When you're looking for the right place to eat, there's an app for that. When you need directions getting there, there's an app for that. And if you're trying to make a healthy choice, there's an app for that. But what about an app that tells you how you're doing with your money? Now, there's an app for that. It's called Moovin, a free app and debit account that automatically tracks your spending. You get real-time feedback with every purchase you make and a debit account with no overdraft or monthly fees. So if you want to stay on track with your money, download the Moovin app for free on iPhone or Android and check out Moovin.com. That's M-O-V-E-N.com.
The successful businesses of today do everything they can to meet the needs of their customers. But outdated IT systems mean that banks often struggle to offer the same level of personalized service. SunTech is working with some of the world's leading banks to help them provide the products, offers, and services that their customers need and want. Visit suntechgroup.com to find out more. That's suntechgroup.com.
Your bank's customers expect comprehensive, convenient, and consistent service when and where they need it. A mobile app is a great start, but with so many devices and operating systems out there, it can be hard to keep up with demand. That's why today's leading banks count on the Kony Multichannel Experience Cloud. With Kony, you can design, develop, and manage multi-channel apps from one integrated platform. Build an app once, and with one click, you can deploy it securely across all digital channels, phones, tablets, desktop, and more. That means more efficiency for you and a better experience for your customers. Want to get to market fast? Explore Kony's range of ready-to-run apps, including retail, commercial, and private banking. With features like person-to-person transfers, targeted campaigns, built-in integrations, and cutting-edge compliance, Kony apps provide the framework and flexibility you need to rise above the competition. Go beyond first-generation mobile banking. Visit Kony.com/BK to launch your multi-channel strategy. That's KONY.com/BK.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. Thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest and charges statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. Thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here, and it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Move In is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Move In today.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
We are back. This is Breaking Banks. If you want to join the conversation on Twitter, our hashtag is #breakingbanks. It's sort of, the hash is redundant. You say the hashtag is Breaking Banks. You can see I'm a bit rusty. Christmas did it to me. Too many Christmas dinners and, you know, things like that, sitting down and relaxing. Anyway, so before the break, we had on Matt Goldman talking about Wallaby. Now, recently, Bankrate, I think, came along and offered you a deal. It was too good to refuse, Matt. So tell us about the acquisition.
Yeah, that's right. We were acquired by Bankrate on December 1st. So we had a commercial partnership that we struck with Bankrate in 2013 to power their, part of their website at creditcards.com, which they own, as well as one of their mobile app for creditcards.com with Wallaby software. And the acquisition really came out of that. I think it's a pretty classic startup story that you get a bigger company as a customer, and over time you see more opportunities to work together closely and make that a better complete business than as two independent companies just being partners.
Yeah. And how does that help you guys in terms of furthering the mission for Wallaby?
I think there's a couple big factors. I mean, it's great to have a substantial balance sheet behind you. Bankrate's a sizable public company worth more than $1 billion, you know, traded on the NYSE. And so that gives us a lot of advantages mentally. Don't have to worry about making payroll like startup CEOs tend to. And also from a business development standpoint, it's easier to close some deals. There are certainly some organizations that won't work with startups just because of the volatility, if you will, of a startup, the fact that it might not be around in a few years. And then finally, I think it really gives us the ability to pursue some of our longer-term goals around getting closer to being part of payment processing, which being inside the payment network, as you know, is hard and And especially when you're trying to do things that are a little bit different, you know, the balances that a bank partner might require or the risk profile that you carry is very important to those kind of core payment infrastructure players. And being part of a public company helps solve a lot of those issues.
I understand. Did you build your own processor capability?
So we don't have a processing capability per se. We have a decisioning capability. So if you think about the future of digital wallets and how they're on computing devices that are internet connected, we think that's an ideal place for us to play, where we can figure out what card, or, you know, they won't be really cards anymore, right? But what account to pull out of that wallet and use. You know, so whether you're using Apple Pay or some future product we haven't seen yet, you still need to pick from among your accounts, and whether that's going to be your debit card or one of your credit cards, and the factors that go into choosing that is something that software should be able to do for you. And that's really where we've focused, is on making that decision to the consumer's advantage in extremely high speed.
So this is all powered through your app, this decision matrix, for the consumer at least.
Yeah, so today, you know, the way consumers access that is in the app. You launch it, geolocates you, shows you a nearby store, and tells you which card to use. But that is available as an API, and we've done a little bit of experimentation with some other startups around the payment processing. But our ultimate goal is to get that into, you know, more hands and more people, of course, where you could see it being integrated to things like Apple Pay or other, you know, future payment technologies, where you're still just using your thumbprint or your EKG or whatever else is going to be out there. But something's got to get picked out of your wallet. And if you're not physically using your wallet, you need software to make that decision for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. Well, at this point, Matt, I'd like to introduce another guest, Chris Kampshoff. Is that how I say it, Chris?
Yeah, Kampshoff. So it's
Kampshoff.
Yeah.
Kampshoff. Okay.
Very good.
And
Chris is
the CEO, and I'm guessing the founder of Lendstar business. Sure. And you're based where, Chris? So everyone.
We are based in Munich, in Germany.
Yep. So you're just not far from our friends at Fidor.
Oh, actually,
do you know Matthias and the guys there?
Yes, of course. And we are almost next door.
Almost next door. So you guys have what you call a social financial network, but essentially you allow lending activities, not in the traditional P2P sense of a lending club or a crowdsourcing, but you're very much about the socialization of money and lending. So something like, you know, if I was to borrow money from a friend, you guys could be the platform that would enable that. Am I right?
Absolutely. I mean, this is a field where, where a lot of problems are usually occur. You know, like, have I given you back the €50 or $50 that you borrowed me last week, and all these questions around it. And we make this whole process pretty simple. But we're not only doing lending, we do all kinds of private financial transactions, like also collecting money for a birthday present or splitting costs in a flat share or something like that. You can all organize this with our app, and our aim is to make these kind of small money transactions much more easier for the people, and to take the hassle out of these processes, like reminding people. Nobody really likes to remind his friends that he still owes you $20 or so. And then we do that for the people, and bring this all in a very intuitive and communicative environment, like with features like adding pictures, comments, and so on. So bringing a lot of more fun into this dull money matter.
Are you just in Germany, or you're pan-European?
Pan-European, currently mainly in the Eurozone. Core market, as we are still a small company, is Germany, but we are currently expanding and talking, for example, also to partners in UK or Austria, and also thinking to expand more to Spain, France, and countries in this this direction.
Great.
And go ahead. The greater vision is absolutely to make Lendstar a global business, because I think there's a demand globally for a service like this, and the problems are similar, independently if you're in Germany, in the US, or maybe in Vietnam, for example.
So like Lending Club, are you having institutional lenders take interest as well in providing access to funds?
It's always within your peer group. So it means it's always that you borrow money.
So it's definitely peer to peer.
Absolutely. And it's always, you know, people you know. And we're talking really about small amounts. So not really like Lending Club, a couple of $1,000. So it's our average amounts for the borrowing are around 100 euros, which is about 120 US dollars. So relatively small amounts. So it's really the money for the moment, as we like to call it, that we try to solve to make this accessible. So that's why we also chose a mobile platform, because mobile is where the people are, and with Lendster you can act any second you are having your mobile available. So if you're in the tube or if you are on the street or wherever you are, you can add funds or ask for funds.
And I think money is becoming increasingly, well, it's always been a social part. It's been a part of our social fabric, you know, like splitting the bill at a restaurant. It's a social activity. We tend to spend more money with our friends, so that makes sense. Now, a few weeks ago, we were talking on the show about a Quartz article on QZ.com or Quartz, the Quartz online magazine, about the so-called Venmo line, where you see a distinct behavioral shift between under 30s and over 30s in the terms they, in the way they use, particularly in the United States, where checks have been a big part of the landscape, where they're anti-check, the under 30s, and they use mobile to send money to each other all the time. And there's a very distinct behavioral shift. Are you seeing from a demographics perspective similar things in terms of the socialization and borrowing and this sort of activity that Lendstar supports? Is there that sort of distinct line where it's very strong millennials and not so strong for their parents, or what are you seeing?
I hope to get the parents too later on, but absolutely no. The millennials, for them their life is very digital, always have been, and it's getting more digital. Books are digital, music is digital for decades almost, and so the question is really why do I have to carry cash with me around? And so therefore we see higher acceptance from a younger generation. So our average is currently between 23 and 25 years old. So definitely the younger generation. I mean, they are also more open to new things. This is also true. So that helps. But I think it's also kind of cultural thing in this age.
So maybe let me just ask Jeff Stewart from Lendo. Jeff, do you see those same patterns in places like Mexico and Indonesia and the Philippines? Is it that generational shift as well?
We've been surprised how similar the networks are cross cultures. I think the biggest change you see is, the first 6 months someone gets into gets online or gets a social network, they behave differently. But after that, they're very, very similar.
Very interesting. In terms of Lendstar's activity, can you talk about sort of the size of the loan book or funds you're managing, or is that not something you can disclose, Chris?
No. The point is that we are not really managing these funds. We are really more like a communication platform. So
right.
the funds are always transferred between the people directly. And we started a bit more than a year ago. And currently we have five digits of users, mainly currently in Germany. But as I said, we are expanding now to other countries. And hope also to grow here. But we see good activities, but really more in the smaller funds. But this is what we like. We don't want that people finance their cars, for example, because therefore I think they are better services than Lendstar. But really for the 100 bucks that are missing for the party tonight or so, this is what we want to organize and make easy that you borrow then 10 US dollars from 10 people in a very simple way to make this possible and to give this option. This is what we're doing.
Very good, very good. So at this point, what I'd like to do is maybe delve a little bit deeper into sort of the data models emerging around the lending. And to that end, I'll ask Emmanuel Marot to join us. Emmanuel runs a business called Lending Robot. Emmanuel, tell us a little bit about Lending Robot and what the technology is that you guys do.
So what LendingRobot does is we help people to invest in peer lending. It's cloud-based technology that automates everything from the decision-making down to the execution of the orders. For those who are not familiar with peer lending, it's lending without banks, right? So it's connecting borrowers with lenders and trying to circumnavigate traditional institutions in the middle, the banks, that are not super efficient usually. And so doing this allows to lower their expenses, which means, in turn, both lower rates for the borrowers and much higher returns for the lenders. We're talking about maybe like, let's say, an average of 7% net annual return. So if you compare that to 1% for a saving account, that's a huge difference. That being said, investing in peer lending is time-consuming, it's complicated, and it's competitive. So that's where LendingRobot is here to help. We provide the technology, the automation technology, so retail investors can access that market very, very easily and compete with the hedge funds.
And so you work with the likes of Lending Club. So can you tell us sort of how that works?
Yes. So our clients are people investing in those platforms like Lending Club, for instance. What we do is we manage their investment for them.
Right.
So we connect to the Lending Club platform, for instance, and we monitor how much cash is available on their account today. And they may have some preferences, like, you know, some people may want only to invest in 36-month loans. Some of them may have some very specific ideas about what they want, like grade A, 1 to B4, or something like this. Some others, like, well, I'm new to this space, so please decide for me. So in other cases, when there's new loans appearing on the platform, we check if that's suitable for their investing criteria, and we submit orders if relevant.
Mm. So in terms of the algorithms, you're doing more about, is it more about managing the portfolio of investment, or is it more about choosing the type of investment for your customers? Where's the data magic here?
So right now it's about choosing. Right now, the idea is like you get two loans appearing on the platform, okay? On one, for instance, it says you can invest $50, you can lend $50 to someone who wants to borrow $5,000 in Nevada for fixing his car. Or you can invest $100 if someone in Florida and who wants to pay back credit card. How do you decide? So we get all those parameters coming from the platform, about 40 variables, and we have a machine learning algorithm that tries to predict what would be the final return and so decide where to direct your money.
Yeah. And what does the Lending Club IPO mean for your organization?
Well, it's good news, you know. It's the peer lending space is growing fast. I think it helps us that it makes people realize peer lending is coming out of age. And it's becoming like a more and more serious alternative to traditional banking. So we see a lot of people coming now, and they're like, wow, that looks like a great way to diversify my investment, and I should put some peer lending in my portfolio, but I don't know anything of this. And I don't want to spend like 3 hours per day on my computer choosing loans. So that's where LendingRobot is a perfect solution for them.
So, Jeff, maybe I'll ask you as well, in terms of Lendo's business, do you see more and more these sort of back-end support networks for access to capital for startups like Lendo?
Or
do you just independently deal with it?
I see the back-end access to capital for lending platforms really falling into place. I think that the efficiency there's a lot more demand for putting money to work than there are lending platforms right now. So I think you're going to see increased efficiency, and essentially you can, you know, plug into some of these platforms like Orchard. But I think the issue is today the marketplace lending is coming from Lending Club and Prosper, who are both focused on the high-end people who have a credit score. For marketplace lending to be successful, they're going to have to go to people with thinner files, and that means international.
Yep.
And that's where I think I'm really excited about how services like LendingRobot and marketplace lending platforms and Lendo can all work together.
And also then throwing in the risk modeling and those sort of things, because they're also going to be exposed to more risk unless they use these different models. So, all right, guys, listen, let's have a quick break. We've got James Lloyd joining us from AMP in Hong Kong. It's very early in the morning there. It's 20 minutes to 5, 4:41 in Hong Kong. So we're very grateful for him joining us. He's going to chat to us just after this break. But we'll be right back in a few moments.
Your bank's customers expect comprehensive, convenient, and consistent service when and where they need it. A mobile app is a great start, but with so many devices and operating systems out there, it can be hard to keep up with demand. That's why today's leading banks count on the Kony Multichannel Experience Cloud. With Kony, you can design, develop, and manage multi-channel apps from one integrated platform. Build an app once, and with one click, you can deploy it securely across all digital channels, phones, tablets, desktop, and more. That means more efficient for you and a better experience for your customers. Want to get to market fast? Explore Kony's range of ready-to-run apps, including retail, commercial, and private banking. With features like person-to-person transfers, targeted campaigns, built-in integrations, and cutting-edge compliance, Kony apps provide the framework and flexibility you need to rise above the competition. Go beyond first-generation mobile banking. Visit kony.com/BK to launch your multi-channel strategy. That's KONY.com/BK.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. Thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest and charges statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. Thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here. And it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Moovin is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Moovin today.
The successful businesses of today do everything they can to meet the needs of their customers. But outdated IT systems mean that banks often struggle to offer the same level of personalized service. SunTech is working with some of the world's leading banks to help them provide the products, offers, and services that their customers need and want. Visit suntechgroup.com to find out more. That's suntechgroup.com.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back, all of you, to Breaking Banks. A quick shout out to those guys who are on the Twitter feed right now saying hello. We have Alex Van Someren, Brad Limer, I mentioned, Dev out in, I guess Dev's in San Francisco today, Bernard Lunn, Eddie Yoon, all these people shouting out to us on Breaking Banks and saying hello. Thank you guys for joining us. If you want to follow the discussion online, hashtag Breaking Banks. But of course, you can just listen to us live. If you want to check some previous episodes, breakingbanks.com. A couple of weeks ago, we had Robert Scoble on the show, and he gave a very fascinating discussion of his book, The Age of Context, and also Osama Bedia, who is, you guys will know him from Google Wallet days, who started the startup of Poynt, P-O-Y-N-T. But a quick shout out to Robert Scoble. Robert was it just was, you know, he's a very social guy, and he pinged out on Facebook the other day that he's being diagnosed with cancer. So our thoughts are with you, Robert. Hope you get better. He said it's not serious, so Hopefully that is the case, and he'll be back in fighting form. I wonder whether we're going to see him using HoloLens in the shower instead of Google Glass this time. But anyway, you guys, if you've seen the photo, you understand what I'm talking about. James Lloyds, welcome to Breaking Banks.
Thanks, Brett. Good to be back.
So we talked briefly during Sibos and introduced your business to the Breaking Banks listeners when we did our broadcast from there. But since then, you've been busy. It's a few months ago now. Tell us about some of the exciting news. I want you to tell us about your recent funding round as well.
Sure. So as you say, we were involved in Sibos as a growth stage innovator last year, which brought us to the attention of a couple of, a couple of investors who had previously been involved in Sibos. One of the co-founders there, Matteo Rizzi, is involved in SBT Venture Capital. So that's
part of the 100 million club.
That's precisely it. They're a fintech fund backed primarily by Sberbank. We raised $5 million US in a Series A from SBT back in late November. It leaves us nicely positioned to build out the underlying technology and to reach new partners. So we think 2015 is going to be a big year for us.
So for people who want to find out about AMP, they can go to advanced-pay.com?
Correct.
And for those that aren't familiar with the business, tell us about what you guys do.
So really our focus is on enabling banks in particular, and then non-bank financial institutions and some other business service providers to deploy, you know, alternative lending for the benefit of their small business customers. So what that means in practice is we've a slightly different view of the world perhaps than some of your other guests, insofar as it's I think everyone is trying to disintermediate banks, and banks are often considered kind of dinosaurs, which in many regards they are. I'm not necessarily disputing that, but we feel some of the advantages that banks have, particularly as regards cost of capital, distribution channel, and so on, leave them extremely powerfully positioned to enter the alternative lending space. And frankly, we want to be the ones powering them to do so.
So can you disclose some of the banks and institutions you're working with?
Sure. Well, there's two models, if you like, to what we're doing. Kind of a channel partnership in which we deploy our own capital. But then ultimately where we see the world moving toward is a processing model in which the bank or the financial institution utilizes their own capital with the commensurate benefits therein, as I mentioned, in terms of cost of capital and so on. So we're currently in three markets. We're headquartered here in Hong Kong. We're in Singapore, the Philippines, and actually just this quarter we're about to launch in the UK. So, right. Yeah, I mean, and even the UK we see as something of a jumping off point for EMEA more generally. We've been putting the pieces in place there in London for the past 12 months or so. And indeed, we've already signed our first partnership agreement with a major financial institution, which I won't necessarily name at this stage, Brett, if you don't mind. But, official launch coming in Q1, March of this year.
Can you name any of the ones you're working with in the other parts of the world?
Sure. So on the channel partnership side, we're working with Global Payments, which you'll know as one of the largest payment processors in the region. Actually, it's operating across 13 markets out here in Asia. We've got several more in terms of, we anticipate powering several banks on the processing side in the region in the next year. So I won't again, if you don't mind, name them now, but we expect to anticipate announcements to that effect over the coming weeks and months.
All right. So, what's apart from the UK? What's the big news that you guys are working on for this year? What would you like to accomplish this year?
Well, the UK is big. I mean, what's interesting to us, as I say, we're originally in Asia. Well, I shouldn't say originally. We're an Asian-based operation. We anticipate a couple more markets in this region in the next 18 months. But I think what's interesting about the UK, not dissimilar to the US, is it's considerably more advanced in thinking as regards alternative finance. Yeah. What I mean by that is in terms of some of the government support, there's a recognition.
Yeah, well, funding circle and everything there's been very successful, right?
Well, yeah, for sure. And very specific in relation to us and other such players, I mean, the government is to regulate whereby traditional banks in declining SMEs will be obliged to provide that information to alternative lenders. So it's quite a forward-thinking regime in terms of, look, you know, we're all aware of the credit gap for small businesses, and I think the UK government has really gotten ahead of the game on this, and I think we'll find other players, whether it be, you know, Singapore, Hong Kong, some of these other markets will be following their lead.
Absolutely. Great. Well, Advanced Merchant Payments is the name of the business. You can check it out, www.advanced-pay.com or -pay.com. James, thanks for joining us. Stick around. So this is the part of the show, you guys know, I like to do when possible. I like to try and do some predictions, look 5-10 years out. So maybe let me, to all of you that are still, you're still on the show from earlier, let me ask you, 5-10 years out, where do you see the business of lending and how lending is incorporated into our life day-to-day going? Any trends that you can see emerging over this that you think will be start to be dominant in 5 to 10 years' time? Who wants to go first?
I'll go, Emmanuel, from Lending Robot.
Okay,
I think lending will become more and more continuous. What we see today on PL lending, for instance, it's only consumer credit at the beginning. It was only consumer credit at the beginning, but now it's growing on other fields as well. You get education, you get real estate, you get small business. So more and more, I think it will be something like the big cogs that were the banks, and they did not change a lot in the last, let's say, 500 years, right? It's always the same kind of business. I think they will be replaced by smaller cogs, like guys like us, like all the people you invited to this show today, and that do something very specific, very narrow, but do it very efficiently. Right. So it will allow the finance world itself to become more efficient and to become faster. And with the kind of data that we'll be able to use, I mean, it will be able to lend money to a small business that are selling stuff online just by checking, how much parcels they are shipping through UPS, or lending money to someone to buy, I don't know, a car or something like this based on his behavior on social medias and stuff like that. So I think that the trend will be like increased fragmentation, increased efficiency for the whole finance industry and the whole lending process. And at the same time, it may be also more fragmented and slightly more complex for the lenders themselves or the investors. Mm.
Jeff, what about in terms of this distinction between banked and unbanked? You talked a lot about the fact that enabling access to financial services for and financial inclusion is a big theme at the moment. Bill Gates has been talking about it recently. What do you think is going to happen in the next 5 to 10 years in terms of that banked-unbanked distinction?
Well, I think the entire finance industry is about to be radically changed, and I think the roadmap we've seen with the internet and other industries, and that's going to have a very positive impact on the underbanked. You know, if you think of the internet 1995 timeframe, you had a massive supranationalization. The internet doesn't understand borders, and financial services historically has thought about borders. When you can download an app from anywhere in the world, that changes. I completely agree with the idea of this sort of componentization or very small specialized services. We saw that also in 1995. You know, my second company, we had 45 developers to build out the core technology. Today, you pull down some servers from Amazon, you use your Google Analytics, you essentially have components where you can launch very sophisticated services. You're going to see the same thing happen in financial services. And then I think the other big change is a move to real time. That brings out costs. It squeezes out costs, which means that lowers risk, which means that you can now offer services to people that historically were unprofitable customers. So,
but can be profitable based on... Yeah, based on real-time and lower distribution costs. Very good. Matthew, in terms of, you talked about the one that I like to talk about is, you know, how do you, you know, what do you call the head of cards when the plastic disappears? But, you know, all of these businesses that have been focused on that physical artifact tying you to a relationship. When that becomes harder to defend because there's no physical artifact and it's more about the features wrapping around the product, how does that change the nature of rewards in the payments ecosystem?
Yeah, we think that the digitization of payments is going to enable, as was mentioned before, lending to be kind of less in point and allow people to get increases to credit more rapidly and enable rewards to be both spent and earned more universally, as we see with things like American Express shifting to allowing you to use points anytime you're shopping at certain merchants. So it's going to be much more flexible, and it's going to allow users to get much more value out of it, and that awareness is going to actually increase the value of the rewards themselves as people are able to benefit from using them rather than just collecting them.
Do you think that the stickiness of rewards is going to become more about context than it will be about sort of accumulating miles or accumulating points?
We think there's always going to be different groups, right? I mean, it's very personal. You have the folks who have figured out how to, you know, spend on credit cards and get to Japan in business class for $5, right? And we work with a partner who blogs all about that all day at thepointsguy.com. But, you know, for most everyday users, it's about cash back. It's about things that make a difference. It's about things like Starbucks giving you your 12th coffee free, right? And we think that that's always the famous example, of course, Starbucks and mobile payments. But things that impact your everyday life and give you that immediate satisfaction or gratification are where rewards are headed. And being digital enables that without you having to carry around 50 key cards, right, to keep track of all the different programs.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned that. We're going to have Chuck Davidson on, who was the creator of the Starbucks app, next month on the show. So you guys might want to check that out, because I'm sure that would be very insightful. And I think Jared Spool, who some of you might know, is an author in the user experience space, is going to be on that show as well. So, all right, well, listen, guys, we're running out of time, so let me go around and thank everybody. James Lloyds from Advanced Merchant Payments in Hong Kong at 5 o'clock in the morning. Thanks for getting up and joining us.
Thank you for having me, Brent.
Have a great day. Christoph Kampshoff.
Yes,
Lenstar in Munich. Thank you very much, Danke, sir, for joining
us.
Emmanuel Marot, who has a very French name but is in Seattle, from Lending Robot. Thanks, Emmanuel.
Thanks, Brad.
Jeff Stewart, Lendo CEO. Always good to have you on, Jeff. And Matt Goldman from Wallaby. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you.
A very international cast, Brett. Congratulations.
Absolutely. A great show. Next week, guys, we're going to be talking about millennials and how banks have to change their tune if they're going to stay relevant for millennials, not only banks but credit unions as well. So that's going to be definitely an interesting show. Check out breakingbanks.com for some of our episodes previously. And thanks again for joining us. Have a great week that's left of it, and we'll see you again next week on Breaking Banks. I've been your host, Brett King, and we're live to 72 countries, 250,000 listeners, largest fintech radio show in the world. That's all because of you guys listening. So thanks again. See you again next week, guys. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern time on the Voice America Business Channel. We'll explore more changes and challenges next week.